What's happening, everyone? This is the Celtics Talk Podcast. Kyle Draper, A'Sherrod Blakely, coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Cumberland Farms coffee is just 99 cents any size. That's 99 good reasons to switch. What's up, A'Sherrod? I'm sitting here holding your phone because I had to just read that special read from Cumberland Farms. You know, they got some of the best coffee around. And you're getting all these notifications and everything. I'm like, why is CNN blowing A'Sherrod up? Why the Wall Street Journal blowing A'Sherrod up? You got to turn off those notifications. You don't need to see that.
Yeah, I do, because I actually like to know what's happening in the world and get different perspectives and just, frankly, expand my mind. Something that you might want to try to do every now and then.
You can follow without actually, like... Dude, you know how often, like, CNN tweets, bro?
Yes, like I do. As a matter of fact, they let me know when they
tweet.
You
would be an expert at that, actually. Exactly. You would be an expert. Yo, we're going to get into some basketball, man. We got a great show today. You go one-on-one with Gordon Hayward. He's back. He's ready.
Yeah, he's feeling himself. Feeling himself. Daddy is happy.
We're going to talk about Gordon, but he looked a little pudgy to me. Did he look a little thick, extra thick when you saw
bigger.
Him? Yeah, he looks bigger.
I think not necessarily pudgy, but just bigger than what I remember. He's been putting time in the gym. But you know what? That's to be expected when you think about the amount of time that he wasn't able to physically get out there and run and just do the things that he's accustomed to doing. He had to put some time in the gym. Yeah. And I think it's showing up. I think it's a good look for him. Because when you think about the way he is going to have to play, they're going to need another guy who can create a shot off the dribble, get to the paint, do some special things there. And if he's got more bulk to work with, he can take them hits.
You know what? That's true. Because plus, they're going to be using him down low a lot, too.
They're going to have to.
You know,
they're going to have to. And that, to me, is what makes them just just an insanely scary team. Because you got Tatum in all that damn length where he could get some buckets on the block. You got a stronger Gordon Hayward who I think is a lot more – well, he's a lot more athletic than people give him credit for. He's got legit bounce, and he can do some special things on the block too. And then you got Kyrie doing what Kyrie does. You know, Jaylen Brown giving you what he got at both ends of the floor. T-Rose coming off the bench. Marcus Smart's back in the building.
Yep,
Come on, man. You go like 7-8 deep.
Easily. I mean, you can go 10 deep with this
squad.
They're
going to have to go 10 deep. I think we'll see 10 guys play every night barring injuries.
Yeah, and we're going to also talk more Celtics stuff with Ben Golliver of SI.com. They came out with their NBA Top 100, the top 100 players of 2019.
And, interesting.
You know, some people are pissed off. Some people are calling it saying it's garbage. These guys know what they're doing, man. These guys are professionals.
Well, the one thing that they do, Drapes, is that they don't just look at points, rebounds, assists, and rank guys that way. They look at other factors. They look at analytics. And they look at – and I think one of the things they value is impact on winning.
Yeah.
That's why certain players are ahead of others.
Al Horford is up there, baby.
Al is up there. And, I mean, when they explain, you know, they give an explanation for every position. Yeah. And when they talk about Al's, you know, they made it clear that, you know, Al embodies a lot of the characteristics that they like in a player. When you talk about what he does in terms of helping you win, his ability to just, frankly, do a lot of the little things that if you're talking about competing for a title, you're going to need at least one guy to do the things that may not necessarily be the sexiest things out there, and he's one of those guys.
Yeah, and they just released their top 10 on Thursday. It had some people talking.
There's some guys in that list that I think that, you know, and I love CP3.
Don't say nothing bad about CP3, bro.
I don't think he's
Keep
a top 10
Keep his name
player.
Out your mouth, man. Put some respect on that
name. I just put respect on the fact that
you're talking about winning. What does CP3 do?
He shows up, and his team does the same thing when all is said and done that you and I do. They're watching other teams play.
He had a big series against Golden State.
The thing about CP3, and this is, you know, and you call it bad luck, call it ill timing, whatever you want to call it. He has had a number of injuries at the absolute worst time.
That's true.
It's one thing if it happens every now and then. But when you look at the teams that he's played for, the teams that if he were healthy, they would be going here or there. And he gets hurt.
This year, I mean, you know, if he's healthy, they beat Golden State.
Exactly. But thing about it, it's to the point where, is anyone surprised? I mean, in fact, when they get like past that first or second round and he's still playing, you're thinking like, you know, you don't want to wish bad on him. But if something does happen, you're not surprised. You're disappointed, as he is, but I think, you're not surprised.
I think 30 teams would take a Chris Paul on their roster, though. You acting like 30, CP3.
You know what,
there's a reason why all of his teams are in the playoffs. It's because of him. And I know Houston had James Harden, and they're a very talented team. They'd be there. But CP3 took Houston from a wannabe contender to a legitimate contender, Shirai.
Drapes. I'm going to
put the cookies on the bottom of the shelf.
No, I'm going to try to put this in the simplest terms as I possibly can for you. Houston, that's James Harden's team.
No doubt. I give you that.
And if that is that man's team, and that man's team goes far, how do you think they got their drapes? That man's team. That man is the reason.
It's not the CP3 podcast, so we're not going to turn it into that. But this dude—he's
a good player, but he's not a top 10 player anymore. That's what I'm saying.
I'll ask my guy Ben that question. He's an expert. He put out the list over there at SI. We'll get into that. But I want to get into your conversation.
And Devin Booker is not number the 50th best player.
Which is crazy. Now I got a bone to pick with that. Devin Booker is a top 30 player.
But Rudy Gobert is better than Kyrie, really?
They have Rudy Gobert.
Rudy was 14.
Was he really dead?
Yes.
God.
But anyway, but I love Ben. Ben, good people, though. I like Ben.
This is like, you got to understand it. So as soon as I saw Al Horford was 16,
you had a party. You had a party.
I tweeted to Lou.
Average what? Now what? What? Average what? What?
But,
what?
But I'm here. Devin Booker's 50.
Yes.
Rudy Gobert's 14. Jimmy Butler's 10.
They got Fred VanVleet ahead of Dirk Nowitzki. And I know
Dirk is
on the bottom side of his career. I get that. But damn, this dude ain't even a starter.
Dirk ain't
six feet underneath.
He's about 3 feet, though. He's almost under the ground.
But the funny thing about Dirk on any given night, and you know this for a fact, Dirk can hit you for 20, 25 on any given night.
I don't know about that, dude. I don't know.
Keep it moving.
Yeah, man. Yeah, because we're going to ask Ben about all this coming up in just a little bit. Let's dive into your conversation with Gordon Hayward, and we'll talk about Gordon after Sherrod's interview.
Daddy's always happy.
Here with Gordon Hayward, Boston Celtics. Gordon, well, welcome back. First off, just how are we feeling heading into training camp? And does training camp feel a little bit different this time around?
Man, I feel really good right now. My leg is feeling good. I'm trying to work my way back as far as basketball playing. Just started playing 5-on-5, but training camp right around the corner. It does feel different. It feels different in the sense that it feels like it's been forever since I played basketball, but we had talked about it before. It feels the same because I'm answering the same questions. Like I'm coming into a new team because I didn't get a chance to play.
Right.
So.
What for you is the way you approach this season in training camp? I mean, you want to obviously get back into a flow, but you don't want to rush things. Talk about just finding that balance between those two things.
You know, our staff makes that really easy on me. They've set a good progression protocol for me, so they have it all kind of mapped out, how much time, you know, they want me playing every day, how much recovery they want me to do. And so I'm really trusting them. And there's definitely going to be days where I know that I'm going to want to keep playing, and they're going to say, just tone it down a little bit. Like, you'll have a lot of time. And like I said, I'm just going to lean on them.
And you've talked in the past about how talented this team is, but it seemed in your absence, a lot of those young guys with talent got experience under their belt. What does it mean to be, you know, rejoining a team that not only has talent, but obviously has experience in a lot of positions?
Yeah, no, I think it was great. It was very unfortunate for me, obviously, but there's nothing, you can't teach experience. And so for them to be able to go through that, also with Kyrie going down, it even put more pressure on them, more responsibility, which I think is good, because that's something, you know, I've only been in one really playoff experience for me. And so this is going to be, my ninth year. So for them to get it in their, you know, year one, year two, and have a lot to shoulder, like that was huge for them. And I think it would help us moving forward.
When players come to the NBA, there's obviously a certain appreciation they have for the game and their role in it. When you have the game taken away from you like it was last for a year, does that add to the appreciation once you get back into the flow of things of how much this game means?
Yeah, I mean, the practice sessions that I didn't want to do, now I'm excited for.
You like practice now.
Yeah, I'm excited just to be out there and to be able to work and getting extra shots, getting stuff in the weight room, all that stuff. Once you don't, when you're not able to do it, you realize, like, oh, like, I kind of like this stuff.
And one of the things we've seen in recent weeks from you on social media is Daddy's Always Happy.
That's right.
And I want you to talk about Daddy's Always Happy.
Daddy is always happy. It's something that, you know, I think a lot of people obviously saw, and we kind of, you know, ran with that, and we've got gear that you can get from my website, and we're going to put
What's the website address?
GordonHayward20.life. There's a lot of younger parents that don't have the ability to buy, you know, diapers, right. bottles, little toys, right. All stuff that if you have kids, you realize are a necessity. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we took the whole Daddy's Always Happy thing and kind of tried to spin it and turn it into a good thing. So feel free to check it out. you know, buy some gear, and you're going to be helping families. So.
And you guys have a school drive coming up soon. Can you talk a little bit about what that's going to be?
Yeah, we do. People can bring in school supplies. A lot of people, same thing as, you know, the Daddy's Always Happy. A lot of people don't have those school supplies that are kind of like necessities. You take them for granted, but you need them. And so we need help. So if you can bring some school supplies down next Saturday, again, details are on my website, and, you know, I Instagrammed about it and stuff like that. But I'll be there. So chance to meet me, take a photo, different things like that, and help people out.
And come out, and that will make all daddies happy.
That's right.
Thanks a lot, Gordon. Appreciate it.
All right.
All right, Sherrod, good stuff right there with Gordon Hayward. I think, you know, obviously Celtics fans are excited for the season. How excited do you think they are for Gordon Hayward's return? Because people might be sleeping on this dude a little bit, though, and they forget.
I think they are sleeping on Gordon. And I think it's going to take him a little bit of time to kind of get into the flow and get back to where he was pre-injury. But I'm telling you, this past season when he was in Utah and I knew that there was a chance the Celtics would get him, I spent a lot of time watching him play. Gordon can ball. I mean, Gordon is really, really good. And we talk a lot about what he does from an athletic standpoint and scoring, but his defense is really underrated. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go and you look back at some of his highlights. I mean, LeBron James got his stuff swatted from behind a few times by Gordon in the last couple of years.
So what you saying?
I'm saying he's a good defender. I'm not saying he's not a low. I'm giving that as a specific example.
I thought you might have spit some nonsense there for a minute.
Because the defensive stopper for them, obviously, is Rudy Gobert. But Gordon is a good defender. And when I look at him from a physical standpoint, he's a little bigger, stronger now. He's a good fit for what Brad wants to do. Yeah. They can play more positionless basketball because now with Gordon being bigger, stronger, Tatum is going to be bigger, stronger. Jalen is going to be bigger and stronger. I mean, they've got a team now that is even more suited for the bump and grind of deep playoff basketball than they were a year ago.
Where do you see him, like, fitting in terms of, is he a 20-point scorer on this team?
No.
Is anybody other than Kyrie, are they going to have, you know, four or five guys between that 16 to 21, 22 range?
I would say they're going to have five or six guys that are going to average anywhere from 12 to 22 points.
Okay.
I think Kyrie's going to score a little bit less. And Gordon, I think Gordon's numbers, I think at the end of the season, when you look at his pre-All-Star numbers and post-All-Star game numbers, you're going to see a dramatic difference.
Right.
I think it's going to take him a couple months before he really starts getting comfortable. The one thing he did mention was that he still is working towards getting back is that explosiveness. And that's one of those things that when you are a player who relies on your ability to create your own shot and your athleticism, when you don't have that explosiveness, you can't get to your spots as quickly as you're accustomed to. It's going to take him a minute to get there. But the thing about Gordon, I'm not worried about that because, I mean, the boys, that's a bad dude.
And the thing about the Celtics system, it's not all on one guy.
Which is great for a guy, you know, like Gordon Hayward, because, you know, typically when you sign a max contract and you go to a team and you suffer an injury, when you come back, I need 25 and 12
right now.
With him, I mean, if he goes out there and he plays solid defense and gets you 10, 12, 13 points early on, you're not going to be tripping about that because you know that this is a process. It's going to take him some time to get into a groove, and his minutes, more likely than not, are going to be somewhat limited. Because even though Kyrie played, you know, 30-plus minutes average-wise, Kyrie was not logging the kind of minutes a guy with his talent can.
Yeah.
You look at the fourth quarter, which is when the game matters most. It wasn't like the Celtics were blowing teams out. They were playing the best guys that they needed on the floor to win. And at the end of the day, it was Terry Rozier who averaged more minutes in the fourth than any other Celtic.
I remember that during the season because – I was surprised that Brad stuck with his rotation, you know, bringing Kyrie back at 6 minutes left or whatever it was, instead of, you know, adjusting game to game. If it was a close game, you think you play Kyrie 10 minutes in the fourth.
Right.
But Brad, but the reason Brad did that, because his eye was on the long term, the
exactly,
big picture.
Exactly. And that's the thing that I think is lost. And when you look back at that team and how, you know, Terry Rozier came out of nowhere. Well, he really didn't, if you think about it, because he was playing major minutes when the game mattered most. And so when you get into the playoffs, you've already been through the fires of tough, tight, end of game type situations. And now all only difference was that you get more burn. And T. Rose, he already said from the jump, if I get to play, I'm going to be all right. You're right. Going to love me.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's one of the biggest challenges for Brad this season is minutes. You talked about, you know, how Kyrie's minutes, you know, right around 30, 31 or so, 32. Who's going to suffer, I guess, with Gordon coming back, with Kyrie coming back? Everybody's
I think Marcus
helping.
Morris will. I think Marcus Morris is going to be the guy who's going to feel the pinch the most because they play positionless basketball and they've got so many guys that can do so many different things. When you add a Gordon Hayward back into the mix, you're not going to significantly impact Tatum's minutes. You're not going to because Tatum is that he's that good.
He's that good.
Jaylen Brown gives it to you at both ends of the floor from a defensive standpoint and from a third, fourth offensive option. Yeah. Al Horford is your guy.
Yeah.
You know,
Kyrie.
And off the bench, you're going to need Marcus Smart because that's the heart of your team. I mean, that's your soul right there. And T. Rose going to get his minutes. You could you could see Marcus Morris being on the outside looking in, even if they go 10 deep. Because look, we haven't even talked about Daniel Tyson, Aaron Baines. Those guys are going to play too. So Marcus Morris is the guy that I think is going to be on the outside looking in, which is, if you're the Celtics, I mean, it is really an embarrassing riches you've got on that bench where you can have a guy like Marcus Morris who would be in the rotation for, I think, for damn near any team in the NBA.
Right.
Where he may have
He was
some,
huge for them this past season,
but he may wind up with some DNP CDs this year.
Oh, dude, I don't want to see that.
I
That's
don't
my
see
guy
that
from
either.
Philly. Come on now. Us Philly dudes don't take sitting on the bench kindly.
Listen.
Trust me on that.
Well, you would know.
I did it one time, never again.
Man,
never again.
Don't act like you did it one time, man. You probably did it like
one time, dude. But, you know, when you look at the Celtics starting lineup, they're going to go small, right? I mean, it's small, but yet there's length
on
the wings.
Yeah, I mean, and I think Brad, you know, he's talked about, you know, there's certain teams that, you know, they play small ball. But when you look at their roster, they got like five guys who are 6'5", 6'6", and three or four of those guys have like 7 foot wingspans. Right. Is that really small? No. And the Celtics, they're going to be one of those type of teams. I think it's really telling that when you look at like the SI Top 100 list, there are only two teams that had six players. That was Boston, and it was Golden State. And I think most people, when you look at the NBA landscape and you're talking about the NBA Finals, those are the two teams people expect to be there.
Yeah, and not only that, you know, the Celtics starting five, presumed starting five, all in the top 50. You know, they got five guys in the top 50, and then Terry Rozier also. And so that's a good segue, Shirai, because we're going to get our guy Ben Golliver at SI.com on the phone right now to talk about this top 100 NBA players of 2019, the rankings that they released this week. A lot of good stuff, some controversial stuff, some stuff that people are like, come on, man, they got to know better than that. So let's get Ben on the phone right now on the Celtics Talk podcast. All right, Ben, thanks for jumping on this Celtics Talk podcast. You're a senior writer at Sports Illustrated, and you guys creating some headlines here this week with the top 100 NBA players of 2019. I think Celtics fans were happy with some of them. You know, Tatum in the top 40. Some people thought he should be higher. Kyrie, 17. Some people thought he should be higher. What's been the feedback, I guess, you know, from around the country about you guys' top 100 list?
Well, you know, for the sixth straight year, we feel like we got every single number right. And we've heard from people in every market that we've underrated their favorite players and overrated their biggest oppositions. And you know, that's part of the game. You know, the most important thing to me, just in terms of explaining our list, is it's a 1 year exercise. We take into account, you know, health and availability is a huge factor for us. We also really like complete players, guys who are, you know, two-way impact guys and who contribute to winning. And so I think you'll see that, you know, throughout our rankings and specifically with some of the Celtics guys, too, we definitely give a bump to those kinds of players. And, you know, the other thing, too, it's we're looking at this in a vacuum. Right. So it's not necessarily about who's the best player in his team context, like who's the best Celtic. So that guy has to be the highest player on the list. It's about if you just, you know, gave every one of these guys an average set of teammates, who's going to have the biggest impact in terms of, you know, statistical production and then obviously contributing to winning. So those are kind of our key criteria when we make our list. And, you know, we understand everybody's got a different way of looking at this thing.
Yeah, and it's great that you pointed that out, because when people see the list, and as Kyle Draper pointed out, they like the fact that there are like six Celtics out there. But Al Horford is just, he's been such a polarizing guy here. We find ourselves damn near having to defend why he's a max player and why he is a significant part of the team, whereas a lot of folks kind of focus in on the numbers. But obviously, that is not a focal point of what you guys are about. Was Al a guy that there was even some consideration, maybe even getting into the top 10, maybe?
Not quite that high, but we had him at 16. We feel like that's reflective of a lot of the qualities that I just mentioned, right? Incredible two-way player. You know, defensively, everyone knows what he can do. He can anchor an elite defense. That's what he did last season. He's been doing that for years. Positional flexibility. You know, he can guard multiple guys. And you know what? If he gets switched out on the perimeter, he doesn't get those crazy happy feet. He doesn't get spun around in a circle, you know, doing the do-si-do. I mean, he's very comfortable in terms of containing guards. And a very flexible guy where you can't pick on him in a playoff series with really, you know, anybody. And then offensively, you know, underrated, unselfish, team first. We've had Al pretty highly ranked for multiple years. We always hear, oh, look at his box score stats. They're not very big. And we're totally fine with, you know, kind of being Al Horford stands a little bit. He's got a little bit of the Tim Duncan light effect. And we used to always have Duncan ranked really well on our list. And, you know, ultimately, when we were looking at the Celtics players, and it was a crazy season, as you guys know, from a narrative standpoint. So when all the dust settled from what was a really crazy season for Boston in terms of the narrative standpoint, you've got Tatum's huge breakout, which I didn't see coming. You've got Kyrie looking like an MVP candidate during the winning streak. And then, you know, by the end of the season, he's out of commission with the injury. When we were trying to consider who deserves the credit for Boston getting to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, one win away from the finals, we felt like Al Horford was their all-around best player, their all-around most reliable player, and the guy where if you took him out of that Boston context and you dropped him into the vacuum or just to a random team, he'd be the guy who would add the most value. And you look at this stage of his career, you know, he's older than 30, but his skills are still holding up quite well. We didn't foresee too much age-related decline this season, and so that's why we had him at 16 as the number one Celtic.
Hey, Ben, you're talking to some of the biggest Al Horford fans, so we're okay with that. I think, you know, the detractors will say, hold up, he's not better than Kyrie Irving, though. You know, but yet you got him ahead of Kyrie. So why Kyrie one spot below Al? Is it because of the availability, the health concerns regarding Kyrie?
Yeah, you know, one of the little catchphrases I like to use is the greatest ability is availability. And, you know, you can't help your team in any way if you're not on the court. And you saw the huge impact of that. I mean, if Kyrie's healthy last year, first of all, the Eastern Conference Finals is probably one of the most entertaining series we've seen in the postseason in years, right? But second of all, Boston's probably in the finals, you know? I mean, I would say they would have gone past Cleveland had they had Kyrie healthy. And so that just puts it in really stark terms. And, you know, it's not just a one-time thing with Kyrie either. You know, he's missed pretty significant time in multiple different situations. Obviously, he had the unfortunate, you know, knee injury, I believe, a few years ago, you know, that kept him out of the finals. And so from that standpoint, he's not quite as reliable as we would want, you know, a player in this range. So like one guy we debated him against would be like Damian Lillard. And obviously, Kyrie's had more postseason success than Lillard has. But if you switch the two of those guys, you put Kyrie, you know, with Portland's roster, we felt like they probably wouldn't win as many games because Kyrie's more likely to miss time, you know, over the course of his career than Lillard was. And then I think some of what he's able to do as an incredible playmaker with the ball in his hands and as a scorer, it would be limited because, you know, he'd be facing, you know, the blitzes and the double teams and the traps that Lillard has to deal with just because Portland's roster around him is so weak. So, I mean, ultimately, we see Kyrie moving into the top 10 of this list as he continues to go through his prime. The only thing that's really holding him back at this point would be the ability to stay healthy and to impact, you know, a team throughout the postseason run.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up Lillard, a guy that I think people just kind of overlook when they look back at this past season. He was fourth in league MVP voting, which I don't think a lot of people outside of Portland realize and recognize. But looking through your list and after going through it and just tabulating all the different players and such, I suspected I would come to this conclusion, but it was good to see that I was right, because when you're right, it feels good to be right. Six Celtics. Six Warriors. Is that just a coincidence, or did you guys kind of, as you were putting this together, sense that it was probably those were going to be the teams that would have just the most depth as far as being on your list?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was intentional, but what we do is when we make the list, we're looking at, you know, a couple hundred candidates to get onto the 100 spots. And, you know, Boston had a couple guys, frankly, who were good candidates who didn't make it. I mean, you know, Marcus Smart. You can make an argument for Aaron Baines. I mean, they could have even had more. I mean, Smart was one of the last guys cut. I think one of the leading storylines just heading into this season in general is, you know, is Boston a super team? You know, we've been talking about this super team Warriors for the past 4 years, right? And, you know, look at the collection of talent that Boston's got. If everybody's healthy, if everybody's clicking, if Brad Stevens is doing what we've seen him do in terms of squeezing the most out of his guys and finding really effective five-man groups that play well together, that's the kind of word that we'll be using about the Celtics come December, right? It's like, are we going to see a super team clash in the finals? That's sort of their best case scenario. So I think it was reflective of some, you know, really nice moves they've made in terms of being able to recruit guys, whether it's Horford or Hayward. I mean, that's not easy, you know, for any franchise to do. I know in years past, one of the knocks on the Celtics was, hey, can they convince anyone to come play for them? They've definitely answered that question. But also, I think it reflects some growth from young guys, whether it's Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, both of guys who were drafted really, really high in the draft. But you never know how fast those guys are going to develop, right? And in past years, we've been pretty conservative. Like if guys have good rookie seasons, you know, we tend to say, all right, you know, pump the brakes a little bit. Let's see them really prove it. But Tatum's an example right there with Donovan Mitchell and Ben Simmons, of guys who were, you know, ranked in the top 50 of our list this year without any reservations whatsoever. You know, we put them in those spots, and I believe Tatum was in the 30s, you know, feeling very confident that they're going to be able to build on their first year success.
Yeah, Ben, I mean, you got Tatum at 39, and you're right, he had a great rookie year. Did you take into the account, into the factor, Gordon Hayward coming back and what it would mean for Tatum in terms of opportunities? Or do you expect, even with Gordon Hayward back, he's still going to be very much a focal point of what Boston does this upcoming season?
It's a great question. I mean, we definitely consider that because, you know, you realize the usage might not quite be there if both Kyrie is going to have the ball a lot and Gordon's going to take a lot of shots, right? But remember, we're also looking at this in a vacuum. So we're trying to imagine, like, hey, what if Tatum is on just an average team? Does he wind up being their number one scoring option? And the answer that we were kind of coming to was, yeah. I mean, sure, he's young. He was used, you know, in a lot of ways as kind of a spot up guy, you know, earlier in the season before he really started to show everything he can do off the dribble, you know, most memorably, you know, posterizing LeBron in the playoffs. Right. But, you know, we think if, like, let's say he's on the Charlotte Hornets, like, do they run the offense through him? They probably do. Right. And so, that kind of makes a baseline where you can't have him below a certain number. Like, he couldn't be below 50 because if he could be a number one option for a team, he's got to be, you know, in a certain rating. And I think for him, you know, he's just in a position where he can be super, super efficient, where he can use his shooting ability. He can use those opportunistic drives to just be an unbelievable weapon. You know, he's kind of a different player than a Klay Thompson, but that's a similar role we kind of see him playing, where it's like, life is so easy for him because he's surrounded by talent and his game is so flexible that he kind of works with everyone. We were also just really impressed with his defensive impact. It's so hard for guys to be plus defenders in their rookie season, but we saw it with Ben Simmons. We saw it with Tatum. And we also saw it with Lonzo Bell, Ball. He didn't get as much credit for it, but he was a plus defender last year too. So, you know, from that standpoint, it was kind of just rosy for Tatum. And, you know, we'll see. He could very well outplay his ranking. You know, we're a little nervous about that. You know, he could be a guy where we look back and think, huh, maybe he should have been a top 25 guy.
Wow. I love the fact you dropped the Tommy Heinsohn reference on there, too, when talking about Tatum, because, you know, that's how fans are around here.
They got a lot of traction around here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask you, just kind of piggyback on something you kind of touched on earlier about Marcus Smart was one of the last guys to not make the cut. When we see Marcus Smart play, the one knock on him, and it's a no-brainer, is shooting. How much of a factor was that inability to shoot factoring in you guys keeping him off that top 100 list?
It was absolutely a factor. I mean, also, he missed some time last year with health, which, sometimes that's a tiebreaker when you're looking at like 97 versus 98 or whatever. And then also, the Brad Stevens effect goes both ways, right? Like when guys play in the Celtics, he usually gets the absolute max out of them. Like Jay Crowder, I expected him to look better than he did after he left Boston, but man, his game really looked a lot different. He went from being in our top 50 last year to being off the list completely. And we kind of, view that as sort of the Brad Stevens effect. And there's other guys, Greg Popovich effect, Spoelstra effect, Steve Kerr effect, where they just know how to use players and get the most out of them. Mm-hmm. One of our concerns with Smart is like, let's say you throw him on an average team, right? What happens? Well, if he has just the green light to shoot all day long, he's going to shoot you into a lot of losses. And then is his defensive mentality, his unbelievable, on-ball defense, pressure defense, like does that have as big of an impact if he goes to a different team? And one guy we thought about was Avery Bradley, right? Like he's viewed as an all defensive level guy in Boston, but he goes to Detroit, he goes to the Clippers, and obviously injuries really impacted his season last year, but he looks like a different player when he's not in a really elite system, right? So does he get all the credit for being an elite defensive player himself, or is he product of sort of a functional unit? And I guess our concern was if you take Marcus Smart out of Boston, he doesn't look as valuable as he looks in Boston.
Ben, when you look at I want to ask you about the top 15 because, Kawhi Leonard, I think you guys had him at 12, number 12.
Yeah.
To me, and I know he missed most of last season and everything, but that's a head-scratcher to me. And then some people would say Chris Paul and Jimmy Butler in the top 10, but yet Kawhi, number 12. What gives on that?
Okay, so Kawhi at 12, frankly, was probably our hottest take on the whole list. I'll just be upfront with that. But it wasn't just a question about his health last year. It's a question about his demeanor, how he carried himself, and is he really going to be a franchise player? I mean, first of all, would LeBron, KD, Steph, James Harden, Anthony Davis just disappear off the face of the planet to the point where like Manu Ginobili's calling team meetings and Tony Parker's taking shots in the media and Greg Popovich is kind of freaking out? They never would do that, and if they did, they would have gotten 10, 20, 30, 50 times as much criticism as Kawhi did. And I think Kawhi, he winds up his kind of quiet personality winds up, deflecting a lot of criticism just because everyone says, oh, that's how Kawhi is. Right. But you guys know this, like, when Kyrie Irving goes to Boston, becomes the face of the franchise, there's a lot of expectations on him, leadership-wise, marketing-wise, being on the posters, being the guy who talks to reporters after games every single night. And Kawhi just checked out on all of those responsibilities. So, if he's healthy, to us, he was the fourth best player, right? Like, if he's 100% healthy, playing like an MVP candidate, everything's going good off the court, he's number four. But we felt like there's just such big reliability questions in terms of how he, kind of carried himself last season that he had to pay a penalty for it. Now, look, his best case scenario is very clear. MVP, he could win the 2019 MVP award. He could lead Toronto to the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. They could make their first finals in franchise history. All of those things are very possible for him. He is that talented. But at this point, we felt like he had to, earn back the respect that he had built up earlier in those years. And he had to basically convince us that he can be trusted.
Yeah. I mean, I know some people kind of, looked at you guys, gave you the side eye look when they saw him at 12. I thought that was appropriate based upon, just what we didn't see this past season in San Antonio and just a lot of just uncertain questions. And I'm a big Jimmy Butler fan. I definitely think he's a top 10 player. His talent, durability, versatility, both ends of the floor. But the question I have for you as we kind of near the end of this is that when you look at that list, and obviously, these were looking at individuals, but they're part of a bigger structure. They're part of a team. When all said and done, who do you see being the last two teams standing from the East and the Western Conference? Who are we going to see in the finals?
I think that's the two teams that we talked about earlier. I think it's going to be Golden State. I think it's going to be Boston. I mean, those are the safe picks, right? I mean, I think Boston's going to have to work a little bit hard for it. When I look at Golden State, though, in the West, Houston was right there with them. They got proof of concept down there in Houston. Like, their style, all their ideas of building around Harden, bringing in Chris Paul, sharing the load, having the shooters, you know, coaching up Capella and turning him into a real weapon. All that stuff proved accurate. I mean, they really pushed the Warriors to the brink in the Western Conference Finals. But ultimately, Golden State's talent won out, and they were able to stay together during some pretty tough times in that series and put them away. And I think this offseason, Golden State just expanded their conference dominance. Like, they bring in Cousins, who I think is going to be a nice fit for them eventually once he's healthy. And then, you know, they don't take the kind of rotation blows like Houston did by, you know, losing a Trevor Ariza or, you know, a Ryan Anderson, not the biggest, you know, loss in the world, but still, you know, a player that gave them some regular season minutes. So to me, you know, the Golden State's reign continues in the West. The East is pretty interesting, right? I mean, I think Toronto versus Boston is the playoff series that I want to see, because there's so many lineup possibilities. Like, Toronto can go small ball now, you know, play Kawhi at the four, and really get some super versatile looks where both teams are just playing interchangeable lineups, switching everything, really, you know, getting themselves into this new, like, kind of modern style of basketball, which I just love to watch. And then positionally, there's just so many intriguing matchups, whether it's like, you know, Kawhi versus Hayward or Tatum, if you want to throw him there, Horford versus probably Ibaka, you know, if it gets into a playoff, you know, matchup. You know, Toronto, I know, loves to play Valanciunas and try to pound things down low every once in a while. And then the point guards, of course, you've got Lowry, who's just one of the surliest guys in the league, you know, going against Kyrie, who, you know, can kind of dance with the ball unlike anybody else. So, I mean, I guess if I'm rooting for any matchups, I want to see Toronto-Boston in Eastern Conference Finals. I want to see Houston-Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. And then ultimately, I hope I'm joining you guys in Boston, you know, during the finals in June, where we could see kind of, you know, a head-to-head matchup with these teams that, you know, are both just loaded with top-end talent.
All right, my man, Ben Golliver, you guys released some controversial top 100 list,
but it got people talking,
my man. Thanks for coming on the Celtics Talk podcast.
Thanks, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Take care, all right?
All right, you too, Ben. Thanks.
Great stuff from Ben right there. Sherrod, he explained himself well.
He did.
We may not agree with everything he said, but
that's
he explained
okay.
it.
We can agree to disagree. I mean, we're mature adults in this process. That was good. It was a lot of good stuff. And this is what you want on the eve of the NBA season.
Right.
Discussion, discourse, talking about players and teams and expectations and slights and all the petty stuff that comes with being an NBA fan.
Yeah, exactly. And the best thing about it is it'll all play out on the court.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? We'll see if Tatum is a top 40 player. Your boy Jimmy Butler.
Let's go, JP.
Is a top 10 player. So we'll see that when the season tips off in October. One quick note, make sure you stick with us September 24th, dude. That's Media Day. So we're going to interview all the players, get everybody back together. The band's going to be all together. So make sure you stick to NBC Sports Boston for that and NBCSportsBoston.com as well. And then the first preseason game, the 28th, dude, down there in North Carolina. All right, let's wrap this thing up. Shout out to Gordon Hayward and Ben Golliver for jumping on the Celtics Talk podcast. For Asia Rod Blakely, I'm Kyle Draper. We'll see you next time.
We out.